Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Lords of Finance by Liaquat Ahamed is a narrative history of the interwar global economy, centered on the central bankers whose decisions shaped prosperity, panic, and ultimately the Great Depression. Spanning the aftermath of World War I through the early 1930s, the book follows four influential figures: Montagu Norman of the Bank of England, Benjamin Strong of the New York Federal Reserve, Emile Moreau of the Banque de France, and Hjalmar Schacht of Germany's Reichsbank. Ahamed explains how the restored gold standard, war debts, reparations, and fragile politics created a system that looked orderly but was highly unstable. With the pace of a political thriller and the rigor of economic history, the book shows how personal beliefs, institutional constraints, and international rivalry combined to produce policy mistakes with worldwide consequences. It is both a portrait of power and a cautionary study of how monetary orthodoxy can turn a downturn into a catastrophe. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the four central bankers and the new power of monetary policy. Ahamed structures the story around four men who came to personify the new authority of central banking after World War I. Montagu Norman guarded London's financial primacy and believed deeply in restoring the pre-war monetary order. Benjamin Strong, leading the New York Federal Reserve, represented America's rising influence and the practical capacity of a large creditor nation to stabilize markets. Emile Moreau at the Banque de France focused on rebuilding French financial strength after invasion and inflation, often prioritizing national security over international coordination. Hjalmar Schacht sought to restore German stability after hyperinflation and political turmoil, while navigating the constraints of reparations and foreign dependence. The topic is not simply biography. The book uses these careers to demonstrate how central banks became the hinge between politics and markets, able to tighten or loosen credit, influence capital flows, and shape confidence. It also shows the limits of their power. They faced gold constraints, domestic political pressure, and incomplete information. Their rivalries, friendships, and misreadings of one another set the stage for cooperative efforts and for fateful breakdowns when coordination mattered most. Secondly, the gold standard as both anchor and trap, a core theme is the return to the gold standard after the war, treated by many policymakers as the foundation of credibility and stability. Ahamed explains why gold appealed. It promised discipline, predictable exchange rates, and a rules-based system that could restore trade and investment. Yet the book emphasizes that the post-war world no longer matched the pre-war assumptions. Gold reserves were unevenly distributed, economies had changed, and mass politics made deflationary adjustments far harder to sustain. Under the gold standard, countries running deficits were expected to tighten policy, raise interest rates, and accept falling prices to defend their currency peg. In practice, that meant unemployment and social conflict, which then fed political instability. The system also depended on surplus countries behaving symmetrically by expanding credit and allowing higher prices, but major holders of gold did not always do so. As a result, the gold standard could transmit stress internationally, turning national policy into a zero-sum contest for reserves. The book frames this not as an abstract technicality, but as a chain of concrete decisions, defending parity, choosing deflation over devaluation, and treating gold convertibility as a moral commitment. The anchor became a trap when adherence to orthodoxy prevented timely, flexible responses to collapsing demand. Thirdly, war debts, reparations, and the fragile architecture of the 1920s, Ahamed highlights how the economic order of the 1920s rested on a precarious political settlement, inter-Allied war debts, German reparations, and a web of international lending that tried to square impossible demands. The United States emerged as a key creditor, while European governments faced domestic pressure to make others pay and to avoid direct taxation at home. Germany, required to transfer large sums abroad, relied on foreign loans and financial engineering to stay current, making its stability highly sensitive to changes in global credit conditions. The book shows how central bankers became diplomats, shuttling between conferences and backroom negotiations to prevent default and currency crises. Plans to restructure payments offered temporary relief, but they did not eliminate the underlying mismatch between what debtor nations could pay and what creditor nations insisted on receiving. This architecture also fostered moral hazard and resentment. Everyone sought a deal that preserved national pride while shifting adjustment costs abroad. As long as credit was abundant, the arrangement could continue, but it was vulnerable to any tightening of money or loss of confidence. When capital stopped flowing, the entire structure of payments, banking stability, and political cooperation began to fracture rapidly. Fourthly, From Boom to Bust, How Policy Choices Amplified the Great Depression, the narrative connects the late 1920s boom to the subsequent collapse by focusing on central bank decisions about interest rates, credit conditions, and the priority given to financial stability versus employment. Ahmed describes how concerns about speculation and the desire to defend gold parities often pushed authorities toward tighter policy at the worst possible moment. As economies slowed, the gold standard encouraged additional tightening to prevent reserve losses, which intensified deflation and increased the real burden of debts. Banking systems weakened as falling prices eroded collateral values and as borrowers struggled to repay. The book also traces how the failure of international coordination turned problems into cascades. Pressure in one country became a run on gold and credit elsewhere, prompting more contractionary measures. In this telling, the Depression is not portrayed as a single shock, but as a sequence of reinforcing feedback loops, where policy orthodoxy and institutional rigidity repeatedly outweighed experimentation. Ahmed underscores the role of personalities and beliefs, including the conviction that suffering was necessary for adjustment and that maintaining gold convertibility signaled virtue. The outcome was a prolonged downturn that became a social and political crisis, fueling extremist movements and undermining faith in liberal capitalism across the world. Lastly, lessons on central bank independence, coordination, and crisis management. Beyond recounting events, the book offers enduring lessons about how monetary authorities should think about crises. One lesson is that independence is valuable but not sufficient. Central banks must also be accountable to broader economic outcomes, not only to the defense of a monetary rule. Another lesson is the importance of international coordination in a financially integrated world. When capital moves quickly across borders, policy made in one center can destabilize others, and the absence of communication can turn misunderstandings into runs, hoarding, and contagion. Ahmed also illustrates the danger of believing that credibility requires inflexibility. In the interwar years, credibility was often equated with refusing to adjust parities or expand money in the face of panic, yet that posture could destroy the real economy and ultimately the financial system itself. The book encourages readers to see crises as moments when liquidity, confidence, and expectations are as important as fundamentals. It also highlights the human element. Leaders carry intellectual frameworks, pride, and political constraints that shape outcomes as much as models do. For modern readers, the interwar experience becomes a laboratory for evaluating inflation fears, asset bubbles, lender of last resort actions, and the need to prioritize system stability before perfection. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want an accessible but serious explanation of how global finance and political choices intertwined between the world wars. It will appeal to history enthusiasts, policy-minded professionals, investors seeking context for market cycles, and anyone trying to understand why depressions can be more than simple market crashes. The benefit is practical as well as intellectual. By tracing how deflation, debt burdens, and rigid monetary commitments reinforced one another, the reader gains a framework for evaluating modern debates about central bank mandates, currency regimes, international coordination, and crisis response. Ahmed also shows how personalities and institutions matter, reminding the reader that economic outcomes depend on decision makers under pressure, not only on abstract forces. Compared with many books on the Great Depression that focus mainly on the stock market, domestic politics, or social hardship, Lords of Finance stands out for explaining the international plumbing of money and credit and for giving the key central bankers clear motives and constraints. It is worth buying because it connects narrative drive with policy insight, leaving the reader with a sharper sense of how fragile stability can be when leaders treat a financial rule as more important than the real economy. If you would like to support Liaquat Ahmed, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.